The changes in the Middle East stir history and politics in unpredictable ways. Our podcast, Wave of Change, helps make sense of the events in Egypt and the Arab world. Subscribe at iTunes or thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Welcome back to our live coverage of the events going on in Egypt this morning. A crowd perhaps 200,000 strong beginning this day of departure rally in the middle of Cairo calling for Hosni Mubarak to leave. And as Ashraf Khalil, Egyptian-American journalist, was saying moments ago on this program, how do you ignore a crowd this large? Indeed, how do you suppress a movement this large? But there are models around the Middle East, and one of them took place in Syria back in 1982. The response in an uprising in the city of Hama in Syria was termed the single deadliest act by any Arab government against its own people in the modern Middle East. That's a quote from Robin Wright, who's the author of the book Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East. And it also suppressed any sort of political dissidence in Syria for, decades after that point. Is Hamas a model here? And is the memory of Hamas so distant that it's possible that in Syria there are signs of political dissidents and uprisings again and critiques of the regime, which is run by the Ba'athist Party? That's the old party of Saddam Hussein, but a Syrian version of it. Joining us now, Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, author of the blog Syria Comment, and Munif Atassi, president of the Syrian American Club in Washington, D.C., joining us from Bethesda, Maryland. Munif, good morning.
How are you?
Professor Landis, good morning to you.
How are you? It's a pleasure to be on your show.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of both suppression and political dissidence in Syria and whether there's the chance of an awakening. We're certainly seeing signs of it this week. Munif, let's begin with you.
Yeah. I happen to believe that although there might be grievances and complaints against the government, I happen to believe that the Syrian people will not stage an uprising. I don't think they're desperate or they're angry enough, as events in Egypt have told us, to revolt against the government or regime. And we have to keep in mind that, in my opinion, the president of Syria, President Assad, has the age group the same as 70% of the population of Syria, and he's highly liked, highly loved. You mentioned Hama. I think that was a different regime. That was his father. I don't think people believe that the regime today or the Syrian government today is the same as it was during his father's day. So
then the current president, Assad, son of Hafez al-Assad, who was the strong man behind the Hama suppression, of course, the son of Hafez al-Assad, an eye doctor who took power some years ago and is, as you say, a young person. Joshua Landis, your analysis?
Well, I don't think there will be big demonstrations. There have been two. It is a tough regime, as you point out, and Syria is quite a different place than Egypt. But there have been two other demonstrations recently, one called in front of the Tunisian embassy when those events were taking place. About nine people showed up. And there was one yesterday in Babtuma where about 15 people showed up. And both, certainly at the last one, there were people who treated them rather roughly and pushed them out of the square. But there will probably be people who are courageous enough to show up at the square this time. But I don't think it's going to be big.
Now, are the differences between Egypt and Syria in this case economic, or is there some sort of a political difference that's really important here?
Well, there's some economic differences, although they suffer from similar problems. I mean, just like other places in the Middle East, Syria has about 32% of Syrians live on $2 a day or less. So it's got poverty, and food prices have been screaming up throughout the world. You know, bread prices went up almost 50% in the last year and a half. Sugar prices 50% the last year and a half. World commodity prices are going way up, and this is the same time that Syria is trying to shift to capitalism. It's withdrawing price supports from the old socialist system, so subsidies for fuel oils and food oil and wheat and so forth have been dropping, and that's that's catching people in this sort of double whammy, and it's happening throughout the third world, and I think this is a big freight train coming towards us. We're just seeing the beginning of it in places like Egypt and Tunis and so forth. So there are economic reasons, but politically, Syria is very different. It's a very diverse country, and it's been traumatized by Iraq. There are 1 million Iraqi refugees in Syria. They have seen what happens when regime change goes wrong, and no Syrian wants to be like the Iraqis. So I think the situation is very different.
Well, Munif Attasi, we have heard a lot about the sort of possible dominoes beginning to fall in the Middle East and little Tunisia inspiring a wave of change throughout the Arab world. I'm wondering if a place like Syria could be the place where that chain ends, what started in Tunisia could, if it doesn't work in a place like Syria, make the wave of change a little bit less courageous.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very good point that we've been thinking about it a lot. That actually, the Syrians, they will prove that they are an island of stability. This is the time that I think the Syrians, is just as it was in 2005 when everybody thought the implication of Syria in the Hariri murder will actually push the Syrians to revolt and just finally stand up and say something. And actually, it had the counter effect. Syrian today, seeing what's happening in Egypt, what's happening in Tunisia, will, in my opinion, move closer towards their president, and I think they will show that Syria will remain an island of stability in the Middle East.
So
that's, we have to remember.
So let's just, before we go, as a takeaway here, so the example of Lebanon's instability on the one side and Iraq's instability on the other side trumps the images from Cairo, Munif?
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. All right, Joshua Landis, you would agree?
I think Assad is quite popular in the Arab world because he's been against America. He stood for the liberation of Syrian land from Israel.
And there's been stability. It's not the chaos in Iraq or Lebanon. Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma in Norman, and Munif Attasi, president of the Syrian American Club in Washington, D.C. Thanks to you both.
Thank you. Have a great day.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.